From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
I am the living embodiment of pain.
Oh, really?
All over.
So metal.
Well, look, we all know we can't spend our entire lives board gaming. I mean, it's nice to challenge our minds and everything, but it's also important to challenge our bodies as well.
Are you talking about dexterity games?
No, I'm I'm exercising.
Like demons and stuff?
Exercising.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Well, Australian board game designer and GP, Peter Hawes, pointed out that gaming is a two-edged sword because you keep your brains supple, but you just sit around eating chips.
That's true.
It's not good for you.
But chips are nice, though.
So you're going to have this beautiful mind in this big, fat, pudgy body that can't get out of the door or wash its own feet without getting puffed. And I don't want to be that guy. So,
but you've already got a wife. So, I mean, you're already taken. You don't need to, like, impress anyone anymore.
Yeah, but I want to be able to get out the door, even if it is only to play more games. So I'm exercising.
That's fair enough.
Yeah, otherwise, you're just going to be like a brain in a jar.
Yeah, well, that's the hope.
Well, long-time listeners won't be surprised to know that we've come back to the subject of Brain in a Jar, the great board game that is yet to be designed by the Dice Men Cometh on episode number
131.
On what's today's date?
Today's date is August the 25th, and I can't believe that you have almost erased 130 episodes because we have spent a lot of time this week trying to make sure episode 130 was out in the public because of the little changes to the feed that we've had.
And I do believe that 131 will be a bit quicker off the mark. My name's Trent.
I'm Garth.
I'm Leon.
And coming up this week.
This week is going to start with a boom. Or will it? Because we're going to talk Two Rooms and a Boom that we were very fortunate to play and run at Hobart's latest Winter Games Fest that happened on the last weekend. We're going to have a chat with one of the movers and shakers, one of the committee members and decision makers about BorderCon and all that's happened in the last week with that particular gaming venue.
Oh my God, BorderCon Gate.
I know. Leon's going to talk to us about his favourite food, which is sushi. Is that right?
Yeah, I love it.
And Trent, you're just going to, talk about your obsession
and
something.
And play this tune. Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Men Cometh with Trent and Garth and Leon this evening. And this is a show about board games and card games. Tragic, yes, but true. And you know it's reached truly tragic proportions when somebody else is looking into your board game collection and exploring the games that you haven't played.
Yeah.
Like Two Rooms and a Boom.
Exactly. And we are talking about this game because we were very kindly asked to run a version of this game at Hobart's most recent Winter Games Fest. We did that on Saturday night. And we very fortunately had around about 24 players for the couple of games, which was a really good number because we are talking a game that plays from somewhere in the vicinity of 6 up to, with all the expansions, 60-odd.
Yeah, and I'm really glad this finally got a go because I kickstarted this back in the day.
Yeah.
And I heard so much about it, but my crushing shyness prevents me from mixing in rooms full of large people, as we all know.
Yeah.
So is it really all it's cracked up to be?
Well, this is part of the story of Two Rooms and a Boom because you are one of those people, and there were a lot of people. There were, let me just have a look, somewhere in the vicinity of 3,863 backers who pledged in excess of $100,000 who funded this Kickstarter on the 30th of October, 2013.
We finally played it.
2013, this game was funded, and not too long after or before or within that time frame, Shut Up and Sit Down did a review on this game, and then nothing really happened until the 9th of September 2015, pretty much 2 years after the funding happened, where they actually shipped some of this game to people, including yourself.
Yeah, yeah, and the hype had kind of died down.
It had, because basically this game is a social deduction, hidden role, party game for two teams of players. Now, it does say it starts from six. I would never suggest you do it with a number of people that few. It is by Alan Girding and by Sean McCoy, and basically they run the Tuesday Night podcast, which has been out for a little while, and they designed this game way back in ancient history.
I was just going to say about the number of players. I probably could have chipped in later, but whatever. 6 to 30, it says on the box.
Yep.
I'd say less than, let's say, 18.
Yep.
Wouldn't even bother.
No.
And the premise is that you have two groups, a red team and a blue team, and you've got the president on the blue team, a bomber on the red team, and you're mixing up members between the two groups over successive rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And if at the end of it, you get the bomber and the president in the same room, the red team wins.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And it starts...
Well, that's tremendously politically correct.
Well,
isn't it?
It is. And, you know, they obviously could choose numerous other themes where that could work, but it certainly makes it very easy to explain. And I was very thankful for that when I was standing around a bunch of 20-odd people, 8 o'clock on a Saturday night with a few beers under me, to be able to explain what is a very simple game.
And a very hot curry under you as well.
It was very hot, that vindaloo. Paid for it on Sunday.
I bet you did. I had a mild and I paid for it, so I'm surprised boom, you're here.
Putting the boom in two rooms.
Exactly. Anna. So look, the way this game starts is you will divide the teams up into two rooms. Now, they don't need to be two rooms. They just need to be two areas where you can't hear each other talking. You will then have... And look, I being a little bit of a control-y person, like to pre-prepare the deck. Shut up, Trent. So that... The characters that are going to be dealt out all work so that, especially when you're playing with a bunch of people who've never played it before, there's not a huge number of questions because this game plays really, really quick. Now, what it suggests is in the basic game, you have three rounds, a 3 minute, a 2 minute, and a 1 minute round. Or in the advanced game, which is the one we played, you have five rounds, 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1 minute respectively. This is also where you get a whole bunch of the extra characters that came along as this Kickstarter became more and more successful. Because at its most bare bones, there is one president card and seven blue team and one bomber card and seven red team, and that's it. There's only two players in this very base game that have anything more than just their colour allegiance.
Okay.
But you get into the advanced game and there are dozens and dozens of different roles that each player fulfills, and
there
that makes it...
aliens, and there's a whole green team,
yeah,
and all
so
kinds
look,
of crazy stuff.
All we did was play with the two base teams, the red and the blue, but yeah, there is a whole... They're not a team because it's sort of the grey cards, and they are a bunch of players who have a whole... They have a whole lot of mini-game within there. So there might be one grey card, which is the victim, and the job of the victim is at the end of the game to end up in the same room as the bomber.
Right.
And there's a whole different version of those cards, which are great if you want to expand the game a little bit more.
And those were all the stretch goals from when the Kickstarter was originally funded.
And there is, as you say, a green team, which are... they're more unusual characters like leprechauns and zombies and all of those. And they had a whole bunch of different conditions. Now, we didn't play them, but the way that they would work is, say I was the zombie character. If you and I, Leon, shared cards, because that's something that you'll do in this game, you would then become a zombie and instead of being on, say, the red team, you are now on the green team and you're spreading the zombie disease. Hmm. So how does this game work? After you've divided up into two teams, the cards that are in this game are shuffled and randomly dealt out. So you'll have two rooms of a random mishmash of blue team in the same room as red team, and they might have grey team or green team. But most importantly, two of those people are going to play the lead role, which is they are going to be the president and the bomber. And the goal of the game is for the red team to have both of those two characters in the same room at the end of the last round, whereas the blue team's trying to avoid that. Now, in the rounds, the same thing's going to be happening every single time, in that the players within each room are just going to be talking amongst each other, trying to figure out who the leader in each room is going to send to the other room as a hostage. Because you're going to send 5, 4, 3, 2, or 1 hostages, depending on which round you're in. And obviously the goal of that is to try and get more information about where this president is, if you're the bomber, and his team, or where is the bomber? Because they ultimately don't want those two roles to be secret. You always want to be able to have a bit of an idea who's got these most powerful cards? And really, that's the whole crux of this game. There's been criticism of it in that at the end, at the final round,
the president dies and the free world collapses.
Well, something like that, but it's really just a toss of the coin because almost always, from what I've read, the last round where you're just exchanging one hostage in each room, it's a luck of the dice or a flip of the coin. Is the bomber going to move from one room to the other? And is the president? And that seems to be how it played out.
And as I say, to be fair, we played two games of this and that's exactly what it was.
Yeah. Mm. So that seems to be where this game can have a bit of a negative review on that.
Would more people help?
Well, I don't
more
know.
Players? More different roles, I think, may have helped that. Yeah. More grey people. I don't know about green, might be a bit much, but maybe some more greys or some more weirder roles. But from what we figured out in ours, that, yeah, that both games, although were different, the final minute of both games were identical.
Really?
Yeah, so I found that to be something that was certainly a good learning, having only ever played this game those couple of times. And the great thing is, everyone who played, it was their first couple of games. So no one had gone into this game having known strategies and having played it before. So I thought that was good in terms of game dynamics.
You talked about setting up the deck and the timing of the various rounds. So this is a game that needs a referee?
Look, it says it doesn't. But I wanted to make sure we did have that because no one had played it before and I wanted to make sure there was an independent arbiter so that if there were any questions about cards, they could come to me in the first game just to get that clarified without sort of giving up what their role was. But it's very, very straightforward. You know, basically the main role of the adjudicator is to keep time and make sure that everyone knows, because when you've only got a 3-minute round or a 1-minute round or whatever, time goes quickly and it's up to the leaders in each room to figure out who they're going to send. And that becomes a little bit tricky because the leader has to try and command, in our case, about 11 or 12 people in each room, figure out who should I keep, who should I send, and why. And then you've got to do that again every single round because you're going to get some randoms thrown into your room and you just don't know whether they're red card or blue card or is there a grey card or whatever the case may be. So look, I thought it was a really fun game. I thought people liked it. And everyone, when it was suggested, do you want to play again? Everyone said yes. Okay. So that was a fantastic sign for it.
But two games was enough?
Well, two games was enough at the deck setup that we had because we still had seven base cards in each side. So just the seven blue cards and the seven red cards that didn't have any special abilities. Mm. So the next time I would play this, and I'd certainly do it again, would be to have everyone with different roles so that everyone's got something to do, everyone's got something to try and figure out rather than what happened, which is a bit of card sharing and a lot of people weren't particularly as invested as they could be.
Yeah, and since this is a kind of game that you would play at like conventions or special occasions, you're only going to play this theoretically a couple of times a year, if that.
Yep.
So the fact that it does end rather similarly is not that big a deal. If this was a game where you got for mates to play every weekend and every game ended like this, you'd probably be not very pleased about that.
Mm.
But for the fact, and you've got so many people as well, so like any type of big game like this, if you've got a group of like-minded people in the right situation, you're going to have fun regardless of a rule set or not.
Yeah.
Which is like the two different games we played, I had two completely different experiences. The first game we played, which was, again, everyone was learning straight off the bat because no one had played it, I was the mute character, which I think...
Which must have been difficult for you, Leon.
Well, Mark was it in the second round. In the sense of the actual game, I thought I disliked it immensely because I could just not say anything to anybody. And I was already clicking in my head thinking like, we could do this, we could do that, we could do that. And I could just not communicate it whatsoever. Yeah. So I basically got two or three guys on my team. It was quite lucky actually because, I mean, you didn't play until the second game. But like myself and Mark were the same team both times, as well as our friend Josh and Paul and Carl was there as well. Mm. We were all on the same team, coincidentally, two different teams. First round we were blue, second round we were red. So once I got a few of them under my belt, like I knew they were mine, the first game had to pretty much sit back and just kind of go, but could do nothing. And the second game, once I figured out we had majority in the room and we were the red guys, we were the bad guys, and I was the leader, how would you describe how I played that card? Because this was just the highlight of my entire weekend.
You played it like a king, Leon.
That's exactly what I did.
Including being the only person sitting down in the whole room, sunglasses on. He'd taken a blue hostage that wasn't getting out of the room, and it just happened to be Georgie, which was fantastic.
Yes.
So, yeah, I can see why you had very different experiences.
Yes, because I pretty much realised we had majority in the room and I just started behaving like a gangster, essentially. Like, people that didn't know me within this game would have been like, who is this Pratt. And I was just like, well, I don't really care. And I did take Georgie hostage because in the first game, she was the leader and basically won it for her team. And in this game, she came into our room. I knew she wasn't one of us. And I literally said to her, because I said I was sitting down, sit next to me, Georgie, because you're not going anywhere. And you're not talking to anybody, which is great fun.
So you're obviously not going to get 14, 15 people together on your Tuesday game night. No. But the other situation I was thinking this might be applicable, well, actually there's two. Would this work for like a corporate team building?
Perfect.
Yeah?
Yeah. Perfect.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Would this work with a bunch of friends, say, after work at the pub? If you were all just sitting down around the table?
Like-minded, nerdish type people.
Okay.
Which I guess is nearly everybody this day and age. Maybe, yeah, because it's not that difficult if you don't have the difficult abilities and
no,
stuff.
Well, it's not that difficult. There's a couple of conditions that just need a bit of explaining, and that's all.
Okay.
And that's why we sort of made sure that they weren't really in that game, because we didn't want this game to be a rules-heavy version. We just wanted to get out there and play it. We managed to play the two games in about 30 minutes.
Yeah, so play the first introductory one with the basic level cards,
yep.
Mix it up straight away.
Exactly. And the good thing is the website The Two Rooms and a Boom has some suggested card decks, and that's for
cool.
You know, your very cool. First game, your very first advanced game, your first big player numbers and all of that, and that makes it a lot easier too.
Yeah, so don't really expect miracles, but when there's games like this and like Ultimate Werewolf and stuff like that, it's more of the group interaction. And like I said, all you need is the like-minded people. If you don't have them, don't even bother playing it. But if you've got the like-minded people in the like-minded situation, then regardless of what the game's like, you're going to have a laugh.
So Two Rooms and a Boom, thumbs up?
Yeah. I look
recommended?
Like, ish?
Yeah,
like it.
Yeah.
Yep, I like it. There's not many games that will satisfy 20, 30, 40 numbers.
Yeah, spot.
Exactly,
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And again, once you get past that introductory game, get into the advanced rules, I think you'll see it reach another level.
And yeah. It plays quick. All right, good stuff. I'm actually interested in it now. I'm glad it's not gathering dust on my shelf.
Well, you should have come.
Well, look, I didn't make it to Hobart Winter Games Fest. I do want to talk about that a little bit more and about conventions in general. But next, I'm going to play you the chat that I had with Neil from BorderCon.
Oh, fantastic.
To talk about BorderCon Gate. Look, we just had a quick chat about the ticketing fiasco. More details coming up on Edge Radio. It's a Dice Men Cometh.
That was Oscillate by Hideous Sun Demon on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men Cometh. We're going to play you a little interview we have now with Neil Thompson, one of the organisers of BorderCon. We just need to say straight off the bat, the audio quality isn't the greatest in the world, but she's only a short interview.
Yeah, and apologies.
And
apologies.
It is a very, very interesting thing in the Australian board gaming world at the moment.
Neil Thompson, BorderCon organising committee member and driving force behind one of the nation's most beloved board gaming events. Welcome to the Dice Men, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good. How you going, pal?
Yeah, that was almost convincing, Neil. You sold out in 3 weeks for BorderCon last year and yeah. 2 hours this year for 200 tickets. What happened and why?
I had quite fears this might actually happen. I don't know why. I guess it's word of mouth, really. And, you know, with the event going from strength to strength in the new venue over the last 2 years, I think people have gone home pretty happy and pretty stoked with what they've done over 4 days. And I guess, too, the hobby's just growing. And, you know, just the Melbourne sphere alone, there's more and more game stores popping up, more and more game get-togethers popping up during the week. And there's more people than ever wanting to play games, I guess.
So can I just run through what you have done differently as far as the tickets this year, if anything? I mean, first up, they've gone on sale earlier than ever before, yeah?
That's right, yeah. We really wanted to make sure that people had as much time as possible to organise, you know, holidays off work or transport, accommodation, things like that. And
so really this is just a case of the event being a victim of its own success?
I guess so, yeah, I guess so. And I think what it also speaks to, Trent, is that I guess there's probably more demand for more events like it. So,
oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, it's to make an event really great, you want to have that time frame over a long weekend or something, and there's only so many of those in the calendar.
Now, of course, there are great howls of protest about all of this and much gnashing of teeth on Facebook about, you know, from people who have missed out, and a lot of people asking the obvious question, why can't you switch to a different venue? Does it have to be back at the Hoveltree Inn? Now, those aren't really realistic prospects at this point, are they?
No, a very wise gamer talked to me many years ago, probably eight or nine years ago, about, and this was back in the day when we were actually only about, you know, 60-odd gamers, and we're thinking, okay, if we get to 100, what does that mean for the old venue? And he said, the question you've got to answer for yourself is, what do you want to be?
Mm.
Do you want to be the next CanCon? Do you want to be the next, well, PAX didn't exist back then, but and the clear answer for our committee is no, we don't. Already I could point to a number of people that I know well that would say, look, I love BorderCon, but it isn't the event that I used to know 10 years ago.
Back in the good old days, yes.
But back in the good old days, that's right. So already we've probably moved to a model that doesn't suit everyone. And I've learned over the last few years you can't please everyone. And to be totally honest, I've been quite relaxed this week. You know, I've read all the stuff, but it hasn't really fazed me too much. I think some of the questions around, you know, other venues might come from not quite understanding what that might entail. You know, if you jump from 200 to 300 or 400, you're a very different event.
Oh, it's a big difference, a big difference, yeah.
And a lot of the big venues just don't. You play by their rules, essentially, and not by your own, and obviously costs go through the roof. And
you lose that ability to finish the game of Demarca at 3 in the morning and stagger back to your room, which is really what makes all the difference.
Yeah, that's right. You know, people want to come to BorderCon to do things they can't do at home on a Tuesday night because you can't play 6 hours after work.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a major feature. If you go to a bigger venue, none of them are hotel-based. Therefore, you can't just stagger back to your room, as you said, you know, 10 metres away at an ungodly hour. So, you know, I've sent a few feelers out to a few people, and I won't say too much more here, but it may come down the track, but about the possibility of, you know, other events springing up and possibly even on the same weekend to accommodate those that may not have been able to get to BorderCon this year, whether they become a sister event or I'm not sure, but we'd love to see other events pop up and then even have some sort of video link up where people from both venues could play each other and things like that.
But still, it does come down to that model of needing a nice little cosy, intimate hotel where you can meet with friends and crash in your room at all hours. And you're absolutely right. We need more events like this all around the country.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I think the market's going that way. I think, you know, game sales are up, game stores are opening with greater numbers. And we're seeing more people gaming on a weekly basis at various hookups. So I think it's only a matter of time before we see, you know, half a dozen events of that, of this sort of size.
And if maybe more people are doing that, they'll realise what it takes to actually organise, because I imagine, I mean, you've said that you've been fairly relaxed, but you're an old hand at this. I imagine some people in the organiser committee are really stressing out over this last week.
I've had to take a step back a little bit over the last few years. I'm a bit of a control freak. You know, they're a bit like that. But on the whole, I think the guys and the girls know they do a great job. You know, I did some basic stats tonight, and the stats are for next year at current registrations that 74% of our people coming next year are at least in their second year.
Yeah, wow.
We obviously do a good job or a good enough job for people to come back. But on the other side of the coin, we've got a very healthy 53 first-timers coming, and I know there were certainly some calls from some quarters about, you know, should we be rewarding those who have helped build the event over 10 years and things by having them get an exclusive ticket. I don't really see it that way myself.
Yeah, you've got to keep new blood coming in.
I think so, and the only challenge for us then is we're not quite sure what level of gaming they're at. Are they gateway gamers? Are they going to come all sort of heavy Euro? So one of the plans for next year is to have a pretty solid group of people that can all teach a pretty great game and have a little corner there to try and really entice that social mixing. And hopefully the event can be as many things as possible to as many people as possible.
Now, Neil, you've got a wait list of over 60 people. I'm one of them. You got 15 returns from last year, I've read, so it's not looking good, is it, for anybody who's on that waiting list?
No, not too flash. I think those 15 mainly came towards right before the event. Given how hard they were to get, I don't expect too many to get thrown back into the ring.
And it'll all come out in the wash next June from the 9th to the 12th in 2017 when BorderCon returns. Neil, congratulations on the success of the event, and good luck with it in, what, 9 months' time?
Yeah, thanks, mate. Really appreciate the contact and the chance to talk tonight on the show.
All right, that was Neil and Trent having a bit of a chinwag about the most recent excitement in Australian board gaming, which has been just how quickly those tickets for Bordercon sold.
3 weeks last year.
Yep.
2 hours this year.
Mm.
Months and, well, 9 months in advance of the event itself.
Yeah, which is incredible. Now, if you are wanting to get more information or if you want to join the conversation, then Bordercon does have a really active Facebook page, so jump on there and have a look. We're going to have a chat about Hobart's Winter Games Fest that just happened last weekend. After this song.
Beasties, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent, Garth and Leon, we are the Dice Men Cometh. And Hobart Winter Games Fest was just this last weekend.
Yeah, number six.
Best Western Hotel. I was part of the group that sort of started this thing, and for the first time in 5-6 years, I actually didn't get along to it.
Mm.
And I have to say that was purely just down to a lack of planning on my part. So apologies to my hogs brothers and sisters. You guys went. How was it?
We did. Well, Leon, do you want to kick this off? Because you were there from sun up till sundown on both days.
I was. I was there the whole day Saturday and then the half day that we had on Saturday. And it was, yeah, really good. It was pretty much very similar to what it was last year, where just lots of people, some of which you haven't seen in a while, others you may have, just getting together and throwing a whole 100 games on a big old table and just going, right, what are we going to do?
Now what?
Yeah.
Because I'm interested in comparing the Hobart Winter Games Fest to other similar small cons interstate like Bordercon, because... Yep. I think that one thing that Winter Games Fest has going for it is that it's in a hotel,
yeah,
right? So you've got accommodation right there.
Yep.
And even though I'm in Hobart,
yeah,
I'm tempted to hire a room just so I can play those 10-hour games and stagger back at 3 in the morning.
Yeah, well, that's the good thing about these cons, as you've touched on, is that it's that opportunity to play the games that you don't just play on your regular game nights. And it's to
like
play with...
two rooms and a moon.
Exactly, so... and to play with more people. And the great thing that Winter Games Fest has is that it's also in the middle of town, so that when you get hungry, you're not beholden to having to eat in the foyer of the hotel. You can go out, you can take half an hour and go and stretch your legs and come back and resume that gaming in a great location.
Yeah, because also the thing is, as well, is it's a one day and then a half day after it, whereas yep, something like Bordercon is it two and a half full days?
Well,
it's
four days
now.
See, this is the trouble. When we were originally looking at it, we were trying to pick a weekend that was away from every other con in the national calendar.
Yep.
And there's only so many long weekends to go around.
Yeah.
Even though Tassie's got slightly more long weekends, but we've got like... we've got local public holidays. Well, we have a public holiday called Regatta Day.
Yeah, true.
Yes, it's a holiday for a boat race that no one goes to. It gets worse because the boat race is only in southern Tasmania.
Yeah.
Northern Tasmania has Recreation Day, which is the holiday you have because you don't have a regatta.
I know. Yeah.
That's how pathetic it is.
But yeah, anyway, the point being is that something like, say, a Bordercon is it's a bit more hardcore because we all travel there and it's much more days long, whereas this... it's a little bit more casual, even though we've got hardcore gamers here in Hobart, and a lot of us were there, is because it's only a day and a half.
Mm.
There's only so much you can kind of do in a day and a half, whereas the other cons are much bigger type things. But it was very similar type of affair. But we actually had the Daicon going on as well, which is...
Well, Hobart Winter Games Fest is part of Devil Island Con,
exactly,
which is run by our friendly local game store, Area 52,
yep,
down here. And as such,
yep,
and because we're a smaller population base... it's a broader church of gaming.
Yes. We had Magic the Gathering tournaments going the whole way through. We had Warhammer and other various miniature war systems and whatever else going downstairs in a big old hall, as well as there was an offshoot room that we had our virtual games tournaments.
Yeah, like Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers is the big one, but then you've got your Mortal Kombat, your Street Fighter and stuff like that. So that was all happening at the same time in this one place, which is, you know, it creates a really nice atmosphere, all like-minded people in the one big area.
Exactly right. And we had Area 52 there as a shop, so you could buy predominantly board games, but they also had lots of magic stuff going on there as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the funny thing was, anecdotally, the numbers were a little bit down on the board game side of things anyway. And I don't know about the miniature side of things and the Smash Brothers and all of that kind of thing.
Well, apparently there was more magic than ever.
Yeah, magic,
Leon,
I think...
Give or take, yeah. But it's still... magic is one of those things that they probably could have filled the whole thing with magic if they wanted to.
My God, it's over 20 years magic's been going, you know? Mm. And it just shows no sign of stopping. It's incredible, isn't it?
No.
And it's a great game.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's good. It's hard to slag off because it's good.
But it gets back to that thing of, you know, magic is all you play. It's like these people's religion, same as the miniatures.
Yep.
And when you have an event that supports all of those things, there isn't a lot of, and nowhere near enough, cross-pollination between those groups.
No, there isn't.
And that's something that's very, very difficult to break down.
But also that comes down to, again, the day and a half we're talking here. If we were saying 4 days, even if you're a hardcore Magic guy, you might not play Magic for 4 days. You might think, oh, I know some of those guys over there. I went to school with them. I might play a board game with them.
Yeah, but, well, I would have loved to have dipped my toe into the miniatures side of thing and the war game in, because there were plenty of people there willing to teach a system or have a quick game, however the quick game works. But I was only there from 2 p.m. in the afternoon till closing time at 10 p.m. Unlike BorderCon, that you can just basically, they shut the doors and go till 3 o'clock. But at 10 p.m. finished meant that I had 7-8 hours, which was only going to be a couple of games, and I'd organise what I was going to play.
Yeah. There was a guy actually there that had one of the war game systems, like one of the original, if not the original, like war game system. He had that there and was showing it off. And I was really interested in it, and it just sounded, you know, because like we're talking like 100 years old here. Mm. But wow. I just didn't even get a chance to look at it because I was too busy doing all the other stuff.
So is the solution for Winter Games Fest to sell tickets in advance and maybe call your Friday annual leave day, get people to book actually a holiday in advance and make it 3 days long if possible?
Yeah, well, look,
given that we don't have a long weekend.
Yeah.
As someone who is not part of Hogs in general, I'm not part of the Hobart Game Society. I've been to a grand total of two.
You're splitter.
Yeah, but I'm probably not alone in that I play a lot of games with my normal groups of friends, and that is the same group of friends that I play with over and over with weeks and weeks and weeks after a time. I think the sort of the feeling I get, it is kind of like a Hogs Plus night, in that it's just a slightly bigger version from the board gaming side of things of what a Friday or a Saturday night Hogs event happening
at some point over the weekend. All the Hogs members come out.
Exactly.
Yeah, like some of the things I play there, well, the first thing I played as soon as I walked in the door was Cult Express, because a friend of ours, Dave, our loyal editor for many, many years, and his wife Heather and their kids, they wanted to play Cult Express because they knew I had it, and it's a 6-player game. I often have mates around like yourselves to play games, not often six. Six is a kind of a weird number. It's only four or even higher. So we got it. So, and then later on that night, we played Above and Below.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry. Between Two Cities.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Which we played with seven of us?
Seven
players,
goes
up to eight. That was awesome at that number. Again, we would normally not get the chance to play at that number. But in that kind of situation where it's just like, oh, you come over. And we did play with randoms as well.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are not, you know, up to that kind of thing, but it's definitely our kind of thing to just like, you, come here, sit down. We're doing a thing.
Could you pick a game of the con?
Oh, yes. There's a game of the con by a mile. When we're talking the heavy game, it was Scythe. There was two games of Scythe going all weekend.
Oh, typical.
Yes, typical. But the game of the con that was played constantly and was bought by everybody, including Garth and myself, was Sushi Go Party.
Wow.
So think Sushi Go, because that game is in here. It just expanded. But expanded in a really good way, in the sense that you can expand it however you want, if you want. Now you've just got this big like menu board in the center of the table, and you put on it these little cardboard cards, which are the different types of cards you're going to have in this game of Sushi Go. So in the original game of Sushi Go, there was like 7 different types of cards that were in that deck. You can play with that exact 7 and you'll be fine. Or you could say, I don't like these cards that do this point structure. Take it out, put another one in. So instead of now the opening, say, 7, there is 22, 23.
Yes, so it's like a lot of different types of sushis and desserts.
You can play 3, I think, different games with like 7 cards, then a different 7, then a different 7, and then you can start mixing and maxing them to however you please. And in the book that the game comes with, there is 8 different possibilities, and the guys that make it have actually said, play with your friends, which millions of people are going to. If you get combination,
that's a handy tip.
Yeah,
because this is not a good solo game.
There's a handy tip right there. Play with your friend. That's very helpful of them to put that in the instructions. Thank you.
But smart ass. The point being is that if you find combinations that aren't in the book, when they reprint this later, which they will for years to come, as they should, because it's a very good game, they will put it in the book if it's popular enough and if they think it's a good enough variety to go in there.
Yeah, because what I like about this, and it is basically Sushi Go, you know, on steroids, is that the central board, you have that mix and match of the tiles, but the tiles are divided up into rolls and appetizers and desserts so that all of the cards are listed are only ever going to have a certain number of combinations. Now, this game is fantastic because my kids can play it and they're 5 and 8. We could sit around as experienced gamers and have a huge amount of fun playing this game probably 3, 4, 5 times because in the amount of time it would take us to play one game of Seven Wonders, you'd be able to play this half a dozen times.
It also plays up to 8 now.
Yeah,
whereas before it only played up to, what, 4 before?
So no, you could play 5, I think.
Either way. And the point is that this is a game that was out there. The Dice Men are big fans of it.
Yeah, and it's by Aussie Phil Walker Harding.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
The fact of the matter is, anybody that's listening to this that's played it and gone, yeah, that's all right, pick this up. If you've got normal Sushi Go, maybe keep it in your pocket if you want to take it traveling with you. If not, sell it and get this.
So, Hobart Winter Games Fest and Devil Island Con 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys are going to BorderCon. You've got tickets. I'm on the bloody waiting list. Thank you. So, I hesitate to ask, but should we just book a room?
Well, for what?
For what?
all right, let's move on. It's the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM.
Ah, that was Isles with Intense, which I thought was going to be intense, but it's actually in tents.
Camping.
Yes, so there you go. So you're with the Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3. Now, before we get to Trent talking about something, I wanted to make a little note.
He sells it so well, doesn't he, Leon?
It's a very good point.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not in sales. But anyway, I wanted to just make mention of this competition of ours that has now finished in terms of the clues that we're giving out,
mm-hmm.
but you have until the end of August, which is only about a week away, before you can get your entry in. Now, we've been already getting entries coming in through onto dicemencometh@gmail.com. We are, of course, talking about the Polymorph game and hobbies, two lots of $50 vouchers, where we're not just going to give you a game. We're going to let you decide what game you want, and we're going to give you $50 to contribute towards that.
And all you got to do is name the three code games.
Correct.
And everyone who enters is not only in with a chance to win, but
they're going to get an extra discount code from Polymorph Game and Hobbies. So once the conclusion of this competition happens, which is the 31st of August, you need to get your entry in by then, we will then reply to those emails with a discount coupon code, and away you go. Now, the episodes you need to listen to are 128, 129 and 30.
What episodes, Garth?
128, 129 and 130.
Oh, those ones.
Exactly. Now, what you need to do is then email into dicemencometh@gmail.com with the names of the three games that we've given you, and you will get bonus entry if you then do an iTunes review. You please have to let us know what name you've done that review under, because some people's names on iTunes reviews aren't the same as their birth names. So we need to know who we can give those extra entries to.
And that, and we just get so many of them anyway.
Well, exactly.
And yes, it's a blatant attempt to increase our audience. And
yes,
hey, it's almost like a real radio show.
Exactly, yeah. Right. And speaking of real radio shows, let's throw to Trent, because he's going to talk about something rad. Was that good? Was that radio talk?
What do you think, you're me?
Well, I'm really into this new RPG on Kickstarter.
Oh. Nerd! I mean, go on.
Oh.
Nerd.
The Invisible Sun RPG.
Oh, is this the one that you wanted Mark to talk about last week on the Kickstarter update?
I have become completely obsessed with this thing. It's not even out yet.
Is this the one that was designed by that loser no one's heard of?
First-time designer, Monty Cook.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah.
Excuse me. That's the modern-day Gary Gygax that you're talking about.
Okay.
I'm not sure how we'd take that, but this is a... Let's go through what we know about this, because it's not... We don't actually know a great deal about it.
Well, I know exactly zero about it,
right.
So, yeah.
So, it's a mature-themed, magical RPG of secrets and hidden worlds, and there's a lot of talk about it being about character-driven stories. But we've had very little in the way of mechanics released. And there's a wonderful... Have you ever heard... you know the film director, J.J. Abrams?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, one of the reasons he produces such great movies is because very little information leaks about them in advance. He has this whole idea of what he calls, what's in the box, right? It's selling the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's totally what Monte Cook Games is doing with Invisible Sun. They're running a fantastic Kickstarter, drip feeding out tiny bits of information that have got people speculating and frothing. And in a day and age where we're used to just getting exactly what we want when we want it, this is just a simultaneously charming and infuriating strategy to take. And you talk about what's in the box. I mean, the game is a big black box.
And I must say that that's one of the very few things that I know about it. This packaging is glorious, isn't it? It is just beautiful. Even from someone who can't conceivably think of dedicating that much money to it, it looks amazing.
Yeah, it's $200. That's the cheapest entry point. And I'm getting, you know what? I nearly pulled the trigger on this today.
Yeah, okay.
And I'll tell you why. But look. First, there's a little bit more about the setting. So it's set in a sort of reflection of the real world that's called the actuality. It's a sort of surreal fantasy setting. There's a central city of Saturnine, and it's kind of got this London World War II vibe about it. There's certainly some kind of war going on, a magical war, and there's veterans. The world is, well, Saturn appears to be dominated by 8 different suns, all color-coded, okay, very helpfully.
Is one of them invisible?
Well, that's the ninth sun,
the
hidden sun. And these suns control and influence the magic that you use. And it works somehow. There's this board with these 9 symbols on it, and you're playing these round sooth cards onto it, which I guess the nearest comparison is tarot cards.
Yeah, okay.
They're going to have some information printed around the sides, and depending on what sun is dominant and what sooth card comes up, the cards will sort of slide around the board and influence the spells that you're casting, and different character types have different ways of casting spells. And so we're slowly getting that information. So we've got weavers who are able to sort of ad lib spells from available ingredients, available threads, if you like. Makers get to craft devices and things like little automatons and they do this with their own card deck. So it's almost like they've got their own mini game.
Okay.
To assemble their items. There are there's a class called Vancers who are wizards. You know, you can still dress up and pretend to be a wizard.
Fantastic.
In this game.
Thank
if you,
you
want to do that. Yep. And it's just, well, Monty put that in there. Each class has its own type of spells, but approaches it very, very differently with its own separate mechanics. Now, what those are, we just don't know, because he's not putting the rules out yet. And that's what and I've been waiting for that to pull the trigger. I want to read the rules before I stump up this much cash.
I'm glad you just mentioned that just again about you haven't pulled the trigger. Are you honestly pretending like you're not backing this lock, stock and barrel, even if you got no more information from this second onwards? You know you are.
I mean, am I selling it to you guys? Does it sound interesting?
It does. What? It sounds like it's almost a mix of RPG board gaming with the tactility of having to do card play and having the board as a central sort of part of the game.
Not
as well.
Only that, but the stretch goals, because it's funded.
Yeah.
And the stretch goals are coming through, so the components are now improving.
Okay.
There's more of them. There's going to be 1,000 different cards.
Wow.
In this RPG.
Yep.
There's also some bonus books, a thing called the Book of M, which I think is a spell book. I'm like, no one's really sure. And there's the Secret of Silent Streets, which is, I think, a campaign setting. So you can actually start putting together adventures.
Okay.
So I nearly pulled the trigger on this today. They're having these events called Key Storms. The Key Storms are limited periods of time where they release like maybe 60 copies of the game with this bonus set of 9 metal keys. I don't know what the keys do. I don't know what they're for.
But I want them.
But I want them.
You just sound like Leon talking about any miniatures game.
And in the time that it took me, because I was checking it all day today, I was in the coffee shop, checked it, no, not on sale yet, got my coffee, walked back to work, 10 minutes. In that amount of time, all of the key storms are gone. All gone.
So you just have to check again tomorrow. So
I don't know that there's going to be that many more, but I'm... I've got permission from the wife.
You could have just saved us 5 minutes of spiel and gone, hey lads, the wife said I'm getting a thing.
And on that tragic note, from where the show started on a tragic note, we'll wrap up for this evening.
I think that's a really good idea. Now, just before we go, thank you to everyone who's liked us on Instagram. Thank you again to Twitter followers and Facebook. Please, please, please send in your emails for the Polymorph Games and Hobbies Code Games competition to dicemencometh@gmail.com.
And thank you for everyone that's bared with our feed for this podcast being mental as of late. But we apologise, and hopefully it's going to become regular so you can like us more.
We'll catch you next week. Bye.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.